Experts have asked for caution after reports that South Africans who recovered from COVID-19 appear to have been reinfected with virus. Similar claims also made in other countries. The reports have raised doubts about people's ability to gain immunity from the virus. We discuss the issue with Professor in the Center for HIV and STIs at the National Institute for Communicable Diseases, Professor Adrian Puren. Professor Adrian, good afternoon and welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Yusuf, and good afternoon to your listeners. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you for joining us. Professor Adrian, do we have proof as yet that patients who recovered from COVID-19 could be reinfected, as the recent reports seem to indicate?
I think the short answer to that is no. We do not have definitive evidence that, in fact, that people who have been infected with the virus actually are reinfected.
Can you say with certainty that it's not possible for people to be reinfected with the virus?
No, I don't think we can say that. I don't think we can exclude the possibility that there could be a reinfection. But I think, as I said, we don't really have definitive proof. I think let's take a look at how this virus interacts and our immune response. I think that's really critical for your listeners to understand. So as you know, the incubation period is about 2 to 14 days at a maximum, but in general, it's about 5 to 6 days. And just before you have symptoms, that is, you know, when you have the fever, the cough, the sore throat, it's thought that that's when the virus is at its maximum in terms of the number of viable or live viruses. And so this is called the pre-symptomatic phase. And it's thought that within 10 days of those symptoms, in fact, there is no virus that will actually be transmitted. We do know that there is evidence that when we do what is called the gold standard test, which is the PCR test, and the PCR test looks for genetic material, the RNA, that there is evidence of RNA, but there does not appear to be good evidence that, in fact, there is viable virus that will actually be transmitted and therefore cause further infections. And, of course, there have been other studies, for example, in South Korea, where this was first noted about individuals who tested positive for the COVID-19 virus, recovered, and then were tested thereafter, and they were shown to have RNA present, and then it was thought that these people were reinfected. But again, there's no evidence that when they tried to culture the virus to show that there was viable virus, that in fact that was the case. And in fact, there were some household studies of individuals who were thought to be reinfected, and again it was shown that there was no transmission within those particular households. I think the other important thing that we need to consider at this time is the immune response to COVID virus. And we do know that there are immune responses in the majority of people in terms of antibody responses, as they are called. And these are, you know, what we call peak at about, say, 30 days and then start to decline. But they don't wane in the sense of disappearing completely. But there is evidence that there may be individuals that may not produce a good antibody response. But we do know that there are also T-cell responses. So I think there is good evidence to show that there is some immunity, and therefore that makes the case for reinfection possibly unlikely at this time, but it's not ruled out because we've looked at other coronaviruses. And these are the ones that cause the common cold. And we do know that in this case, that those coronaviruses, immunity does wane. And in fact, you do become reinfected. But for COVID at this time, we don't really have definitive evidence.
This leads to the question on why people test positive for the virus only to test negative in a follow-up test shortly after.
Yes, so what happens is that, you know, if you were, are you talking about a symptomatic patient, in other words, test positive?
Yes.
And then, let's say, 10 days later, test negative. So what happens is that when you have what we call that pre-symptomatic or symptomatic phase, that's when your antibody and other immune system, the other parts of your immune systems come into play and try and remove and eradicate the virus. So what happens is if they're successful, and we know that in the majority of people they do recover and recover well, is that that virus is removed out of the system and is destroyed. And that's why you would actually test a negative at that particular point.
you've given us various angles to this. In terms of, you know, when do you believe it will be possible to look at the data available and know whether or not we are able to build up the immunity to the virus with certainty?
I think it will take a while. I think that, for example, the vaccine trials are certainly showing that, and I know it's not the same as using the actual live virus as such, but we do know from the vaccine studies that there is immunity and the different types of immune responses. So I think those will be the clues. And also, you know, we will also be doing what we call serology testing, antibody testing in communities. And that will also give us an idea as to how we are actually coping with this particular virus. As you know, the large proportion of infections are likely transmitted by individuals who actually don't present with symptoms, or very few symptoms, in fact, are able to transmit. And so it looks as if that virus, the concentration is still there and sufficient for transmission, but in fact, they may never be tested, and it's only under circumstances of being tested that will show that these people are actually do have the virus. But we do know that they are able to transmit. Again, we'll be very interested to understand what is the immunity like in those particular individuals.
We've all become paranoid with regards to COVID-19, and Google is now our new doctor. We're also midway in the flu season. What are the symptoms that would be red flags that a person is suffering from more than just a common cold?
Yeah, so I think, again, when we look at the evidence for flu, so in terms of the flu season, in fact, you know that we're actually not having a flu season currently, which is, I think, a good thing. And so it doesn't complicate matters. But yes, you're right. The symptoms for flu are very similar to what is for COVID. In other words, it's a matter of the sore throat, the fever, for example, the cough, the rhinitis, for example. These are the common signs for flu as well as for COVID. But I think we have been fortunate this season, in fact, that we're not having a flu season at all.
Yes.
So, in fact, our paranoia should be slightly less
that
on
helps.
That front. It does help. But I think, you know, the key things that I would really recommend for your listeners is really try and practice those things that we started from the very beginning. If you recall, we spoke about the physical distancing, social distancing, the wearing of masks, hand hygiene. And now, of course, because we know that the virus spreads in a different way in terms of respiratory droplets, it's also not always to be confined in closed places. But if you are, that ventilation is very important. So these non-pharmaceutical interventions are really still very critical for us to prevent transmission.
Doc, we appreciate your time. Professor, thank you very much for chatting to us. We appreciate the advice that you shared in the end, and we certainly look forward to chatting again in the future. Thank
I hope
you
the paranoia will be reduced.
Certainly. Thank you. Go well.
Thank you, Ash. You as well.